Welcome to Beyond the Pulpit, exploring the life and ministry of Walnut Creek Church downtown. This podcast is a ministry of the pastors of Walnut Creek Church downtown for our members and regular attenders. To learn more, please visit walnutcreekchurch.org/downtown or join us on Sunday mornings at 8, 9:15 or 10:45 a.m. at 323 East Locust Street in downtown Des Moines.
Well, all right. Welcome to Beyond the Pulpit. My name is Derek Wadley, and I'm joined here by Luke Hookey. Say hi, Luke.
Hey, guys.
Dan Rude. Say hi, Dan.
Hello, everyone.
And we have a special guest here today. We've got Pastor Greg. Say hi, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
And we've got
good work.
Yeah, okay. This is us first time.
Here we go.
So we've got Greg here to talk about Walnut Creek Global today and some of the exciting things that are happening and some of the just the conversations he's been able to have with some of the folks in the field. But I think before we get going too far, it might be helpful, Greg, if you explain to us how did Walnut Creek Global get started at Walnut Creek?
That's a great question. And I won't give the 30-minute answer, but the shorter version is that in 2013, there were five members of Walnut Creek Church that had a heart to go overseas. And what they began doing is really loving and serving and reaching out to refugee and immigrant populations in the city. Des Moines has a really large refugee and immigrant population. And so they began just meeting people in those communities, loving and serving them. And over time, that team of five grew to nine and kind of had split into two teams and were really focusing their efforts on a few different kind of groups of people that had come here as refugees and really loving them and serving them and with the hope of sharing Christ with them. And the vast majority of those nine wanted to go overseas and live long term. And so in 2016, we kind of formulated just a process, a more formal process with different steps in place for people to walk through with the end goal of sending people overseas that had a heart to and that we as a church body felt were equipped and prepared to embark on that task. And so really started organically with just the faithful efforts of a few in the church, and that just grew over time.
That's great. That's really exciting thing to happen. And so that's a little bit how we got started, but what are we trying to do? What is the end goal here of Walnut Creek Global?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think especially since a lot of American churches, their missions programs will look very different from one another. And I think that a lot of churches are involved in really good things domestically and abroad, but I would say that our focus as a church is a little bit more narrow than kind of what the broader evangelical community would be involved in with missions. I'd say that our primary, not exclusive, but primary, almost exclusive focus is sending out members of our church. So we don't support workers from other churches, even though that's a very noble task, but raising up and sending out members of our church that will move to unreached parts of the world. So these are parts of the world with little to no access to the gospel, and they will be learning one or two languages to an adult fluency level so that they could sit down and engage in a podcast in a foreign language and be totally comfortable with that. And then begin sharing the gospel with unbelievers, people that may have never read the Bible, may have never been to a church, may have never met a Christian, may have never heard the gospel shared, and trusting that the Lord will bring people to faith in Christ. And as people come to faith in Christ, their hope would be to gather them into kind of the beginning stages of a church, have believers gather together and be teaching them the word, and that the hope would be that over time they would raise up local indigenous men to pastor, to serve as elders over those churches. And their goal is to eventually leave behind a mature and fruitful church. And that's not a task of 2 to 4 weeks or even 2 to 4 years, but really many people will be giving 15, 20, 25 years of their life to this task. And so that's kind of our main focus within Walnut Creek Global is that endeavor.
So it's really about planting churches.
Planting churches. Yeah. Making disciples and planting churches.
Yeah. It's an overwhelming thought that literally billions of people on the planet, they don't have access to the gospel. It's hard to even imagine that because the culture we live in, everyone's heard of Christ. I'm not saying everyone understands the gospel. I'm just saying everyone has heard Jesus Christ in our country, and they have access to the Bible. They have 100 million gospel presentations on YouTube. They have access to, I mean, it's
all the different translations of the Bible.
It's just incredible. So we are, in one sense, we're surrounded by a gospel witness, but most of the world is not, or much of the world, I should say, is not that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of just leaving everything here and going overseas and learning a foreign language, is spending 20 years of my life or 30 years, is just, it's an overwhelming thought. It's a great task.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And these aren't people that had nothing better to do in the States or couldn't quite find their spot. These are people that were doctors, the nurses that served in the financial sector, that were also faithful church members, mm-hmm. that they weren't just on the outskirts of church society.
Misfits.
Mm-hmm. These are some of the best in our body that have gone overseas.
Mm. It's a humbling thing to think about people. People go leaving everything behind to go do this. It's pretty incredible.
It's encouraging at the same time, though. You're like, man, it's awesome to see how God has raised up just so many people to, with a heart to go overseas, to reach people who have not heard and don't know Christ, and parts of the world where, the gospel is just not even available. There's not even one Christian, right? I mean, that some of these places that people are going, there's no Christians at all.
Certainly. Yep.
So can you give us an overview of where people are at, or how many missionaries have gone out?
Yeah, it's a great question. Our first workers that we sent out, that was in the year 2018. And so we have a couple families and a single that live in North Africa, Middle East region that are fluent in Arabic and are doing ministry there. Two of those couples are learning an additional language. And then we have two families and a single that live in Central Asia. Mm. And so they are all in the early stages of language learning. Some of them have been there just a couple of weeks. Some have been there about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And so they are progressing language and doing well. And then we have family that's back on home assignment. So typically every 2 to 4 years, units, individuals, couples, families will return back to the States for 2 to 4, sometimes 6 months for home assignment. So they came back actually to have a baby. And so it's great having them back in church and just being able to be in fellowship. And then there's another couple that is preparing to go, and they're actually on a vision trip right now in Southeast Asia. And then we have 7 people, 3 families, and then a single that are down training at a training school called Radius International in Tijuana, Mexico. And so that's where there are 21 individuals, kind of a makeup of 9 couples and 3 singles. Mm. And then there's also a single that had graduated from Radius, but some physical health things are keeping them off from the field. They still have a heart to go, but are kind of in Des Moines for a couple of years now.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So you talk about Radius preparation, language learning. Like, what is the process to go from, here to overseas and investing the next 10, 20 years or more of their life? I got to imagine there's a lot
of steps. Yeah. To really, the first step holistically is just to be a faithful church member. And so if you are not involved in a local church in the States, if you're not faithfully serving the body of Christ, it's a very difficult concept to then go and plant a church, to teach people to do something that you have not been doing. So I'd say all these people, all these men and women faithfully served in the church years, some of them over a decade in a variety of capacities, kids ministry, kind of student ministry, college ministry, whatever it is, served in the band, served refreshments, just some of the smallest tasks they were involved in that. And so just being a faithful church member. And then a lot of them have taken a variety of theological classes, whether it's through our partnership with Midwestern, some of the Equip classes, biblical systematic theology courses that have been taught previously in the church. So building out kind of that robust theological base, knowing that they don't need to have the entire theological framework right now. Again, this is a 5, 10, 15, 20 year plan that they'll be growing in. A lot of them have been involved in different types of ministry. So growing in sort of ministry competency. So evangelism and discipleship in an English speaking context. Again, if you struggle to do that in your own culture, in your own language, doing that in a foreign culture, in a foreign language becomes increasingly difficult. And so
I believe that.
So those are a lot of things that have happened in Des Moines in our church. And then a lot of what they have learned at Radius is a lot of that is dealing with the culture and language acquisition process. How do you learn a different language? How do you learn a different culture? And then how would you introduce the gospel into that context, into that culture in a way that is appropriately contextualized, that they are understanding biblical truth, but it is not attached to any sort of kind of culture that the worker, the global worker, the missionary is bringing with them. And so how do you contextualize the gospel in a way that's biblically faithful, but also in a way that would make sense to the hearers? And so.
So Greg, why it's a very long process to learn the culture and language, And wouldn't it be a lot faster if people just had a good translator with them? So why is it valuable for people to actually go through the pain of learning of a whole new culture and language?
Yeah, it's a great question. For a few reasons, I think probably one of the main reasons is that the gospel is a message that needs to be communicated clearly and accurately. Yeah. You see, biblical unfaithfulness or heresy is not that far removed from what you would, you know, see as orthodox theology. And so the accuracy of words, the accuracy of thought is very important for the gospel. Yeah. And so being able to, if you have a translator, you know what you're saying, but you don't know, first off, what the translator is hearing, and then you don't know what the translator is saying to a crowd of people or to an individual, then you don't know what that individual is hearing from the translator and what they're communicating back. And so it becomes a pretty robust game of telephone where things can get convoluted pretty quickly.
We know how well telephone works.
Yeah, that doesn't work well.
Play with your kids.
But when you know the language, and not just, I took a couple semesters of it in college, or I can go down to Mexico on spring break and figure my way around. But when you know at an adult fluency level, when you can engage in conversation on economics, politics, religion, when you get inside jokes, you think about how a lot of times with kids, they say, well, what does that mean? Break a leg. Well, I don't, you have to explain a variety of these kind of figures of speech that we use in the English language. And we're not the only ones, you know, a lot of other languages, they have these inside jokes and they have these very complex topics. And so being able to communicate that where you know what you're saying and you know what people are hearing, because as you communicate to them and they communicate back to you, you know, do they understand the message that I am communicating? And it would be faster, I guess, in one way to go to a country and use a translator to communicate what you believe are gospel truths, but you don't know actually what seeds are being planted in the hearts of those people.
Totally. And the goal isn't just to go to a country and get the sow the seed and then leave. The goal is to plant a church and to see mature disciples made, that men and women who really love and worship Christ. And that is a long-term pursuit. That is a long-term pursuit. And isn't there a danger with syncretism? And I mean, especially when you're preaching the gospel into the backdrop of a country that maybe is worshiping Allah or another God. How does syncretism work in that situation when you're trying to talk through translators?
Yeah. If you don't understand the culture, if you don't understand the religious kind of worldview that these people have grown up in and currently believe, there's a very large danger that Jesus will be accepted, but not accepted in the way that the Bible portrays Christ as exclusive one and only God. And so you might have a Hindu that would say, I love Jesus. I worship Jesus. He's up on the mantle with, 37 of my family's other gods. That's part of, millions of gods. Or, the Quran would talk of Jesus as a faithful prophet. And so Muslims also would hold Christ in high regard, but not as God, just as a prophet of Allah. And so if you don't understand the religious backdrop that you're introducing Christ into, you will get, in many ways, false converts, people that would accept a message that you are saying, but they wouldn't actually be holding to true biblical doctrine and an exclusive triune God.
Yeah. And something when I was at Radius, what year did we go to Radius? Do you remember?
You went, I think, in 2018, 2019.
2018, 2019, yeah. And I remember something that really stood out to me is one of the, someone who was teaching the class, they just said, they were talking about the importance of the incarnation of Christ and understanding that Jesus is he's fully God and fully man. And then he says, now try to explain that to people through a translator in a different culture. And I thought, yeah, that's right. I mean, if we need to
try to explain that in English,
try to explain it in English in our own culture, and you're like, oh man, it makes your brain, it hurts your brain. But in order to be a Christian, you have to believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that he is God in the flesh. And just even the theological distinctions within the Trinity and so many different areas of doctrine, I don't think I understand how nuanced the language is and the importance of words. Mm-hmm. And so trying to cram all that through a translator just seems impossible. And so that's something that is, it's helped me to understand just even the importance of people learning the language and why it's why it's worth it to take mm-hmm. 2 years or 3 years or 4 years mm-hmm. to learn the culture and language before you start proclaiming Christ.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think some of the goers that I've been able to get close to, the folks that have gone, they talk about learning the heart language of the people. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's, you know, it's really what is going to speak to their heart. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the language that you're going to pray in? Or in a time of trouble, what's the language that you're going to cry out in? Or what's the language you're going to curse in? You know, what comes out of the heart, that's the heart language, and that's the language that we believe people should hear the gospel message proclaimed in, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as a church, are we equipped to help people learn language?
I personally am not. My major and background is in accounting.
Seems like it's
no crossover. Totally.
And
no
crossover. Yeah. And then contextual pioneer church planting. We have a heart to plant churches, but we would be more familiar with an American context for planting churches.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's where Radius comes in. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What is Radius?
Radius is a missionary training school located in Tijuana, Mexico. They've been in existence for a little bit over a decade, and they bring in their first class, I think, was 7 students, but they have 2 campuses that can take upwards of almost 80 students that live on campus, and they train you in language and culture acquisition, so how to learn a language. I think in America, we're used to a classroom setting. Mm. We're used to a high school or college Spanish class where you have a teacher instructing 20 people. But when you get into a foreign context, especially in maybe a tribal setting, there's no classroom. The person that needs to teach you and train you in their language doesn't know your language. And so you need to know, how do I teach somebody else to teach me their language?
Straightforward.
And then as I grow in my understanding of their language, I can better explain how I need them to do that. And so it's a very difficult task. And so at Radius, they do that in a Spanish speaking context. And so you learn how to learn a language using Spanish, and you're out in the community in Tijuana, but almost nobody that leaves Radius is going into a Spanish speaking context. It's just a conveniently located spot to have a school training that's accessible to Americans, but it's also a different culture, a different language. And so they specialize in culture and language learning, and then pioneer church planting. What does it look like to actually make disciples in a foreign context, to gather them, to raise up, you know, local leaders, elders? They don't provide a significant amount of theological training. They do obviously get into the word, train people in the word, but they look to the local church for that. They do provide a lot of opportunities for people to grow in their character, grow in spiritual disciplines. But again, they are looking to the local church for the assessment of the local church on if this is somebody that the local church feels is equipped and prepared to go overseas. And so, yeah, they serve a pretty unique function, but one that at least historically for our church has been very helpful for the type of work that people are embarking on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. How long is it?
Yeah, so it lasts 10 months. So it starts in August and it runs until June. There's a short kind of winter break over Christmas that a lot of students will go back to their home churches for.
And you were actually just down there a few weeks ago, is that right?
Last week.
And you were able to sit down with one of the families that we have down there to talk about kind of a day in the life of Radius.
Yep. So this is fresh after one of their 6 a.m. workouts. So 3 times a week, they work out at 6 a.m. So right after that, I snagged them before breakfast. So yeah, one of the families from downtown location is down there as students. So I was able to sit down with them and just ask some questions about their experience, what daily life looks like, what kind of a week in the life of a Radius student or family would look like. And so we were able just to ask them a couple of questions and hear their answers to that.
Great. And so here is that conversation that Greg was able to have with this family.
All right, Walnut Creek family, as you know, Pastor Greg here. We're down at Radius International in Tijuana, and we have the privilege to sit down with one of the couples that has come down here from our church and is training. And so just want to get an opportunity to ask them a couple questions about their life down here and what that has looked like over the last 6, 7, 8 months. And so first question I have for you guys, we'd just love to hear about typical day. What does a normal day look like, maybe Monday through Friday? And then kind of on the whole, in a week, what all are you guys trying to do throughout the week here at Radius?
Yeah. So a typical day, we'll wake up 3 days a week pretty early for workouts that start at 6 a.m. as a campus. So we'll wake up, do a quiet time, get outside and work out for about 20 to 30 minutes, then come back in, feed our family some breakfast, go to class, which lasts until 12. And then we'll eat lunch as a campus all together with our kids. After that, we have language sessions, so we'll alternate between who takes care of our kids and who goes to language session, and that lasts 2 hours. So at the end of the week, each of us will have been in a language session with a language helper, a Spanish speaker, for 5 hours a week. And then the rest of the day looks like getting out into the community, practicing our Spanish, hanging out with our kids, either on campus or in the community, eating dinner again as a campus all together. And then a lot of times in the evenings, we'll have organized events, either a Q&A of a couple who's down here who has just recently come off the field, or we have community groups on Wednesday evenings. So we'll head over to community group. What am I missing?
Those are the basics. And really the goal throughout the week is to put in about 20 hours of class time and then 25 to 30 hours outside of that in language study and community participation, trying to learn the language and culture of the place we're at, developing deeper friendships, which can be pretty hard up front, but progress as we get through the program. And then take a nice long family day, rest day on Sunday.
It sounds like a lot of work throughout the day, a lot of work throughout the week. And then is there homework for classes that you guys do? Does that take place at night? How much homework do you guys have? What does that class
look like? We track that too. And it's usually between like 5 and 10 hours a week. The heavy weeks will be 10 hours. Most normal weeks are 4, 5, 6 hours of homework that we'll kind of sprinkle through as assignments are coming up.
Yeah. That's awesome. So that's a lot of different chunks. Which of those are your favorite? What part of the training has been the most enjoyable for you guys?
So my favorite part so far has just been the language learning. I originally came here not knowing exactly what that would look like. Part of me thought it was just going to be a bunch of flashcards and somebody quizzing me and taking lots of tests about vocabulary words. Actually has been super enjoyable. It's way more relational. We have a language helper that comes in from the community, and we get to run these language sessions where we ask them about, we relate to them through the common and familiar. So we'll just ask them, you know, things about what we see in the room. And as we progress, we can have more deep conversations with them. So right now I'm in a part of the language learning where you just get to listen to stories from their life and ask them about different parts of their worldview, and that has been really, really engaging and really interesting.
Yep. Likewise, I think the language and how that relays into being able to interact with people within Tijuana and see cool sights and go to soccer games and eat different types of foods and have somewhat meaningful conversations about the parts of life that we're interacting with in a foreign country.
That's awesome. Short burst, two questions. Favorite food so far down here?
Tacos. Definitely tacos.
The tacos.
Yep. Tacos all the way. Can't get much better.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Favorite class that you guys have taken so far?
Yeah, mine is definitely spiritual disciplines. I think being able to walk through various spiritual disciplines like reading the word, meditating on the word, prayer, fasting, worship, family worship, stewardship, giving, all these different functions of kind of the normal Christian life. We've been able to look into theologically, theoretically, but then also to have some assignments built in with the program that are very practical, which has been, I think, very, very helpful for me, for us as a family, to not forget that the reason we're doing this is to actually, first and foremost, know and love the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you took mine. So I'll say probably church planning class with Brad Buser. He just says a lot of things that not a lot of other people say, whether that's good or bad. It's just been really an interesting class to walk through. We're walking through Acts right now. We're challenged to read it as with for the first time and with a commentary. And so that's just been really interesting to get into the characters' minds and to think about what they were thinking and hear his field experience too. He has planted a church in Papua New Guinea, for those of you who don't know. And he just has a lot of stories and has seen a lot of things. So that has been encouraging.
Yeah. Just quickly, what does campus life look like? How many students are here alongside you? What do your interactions with them look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have about 20 students and 10 kids on campus here. You can't get a picture of it, but it is pretty tight living conditions. And so I think the first thing we had to work through was just lack of privacy. There's in general lack of privacy, which I think is good moving forward, considering America probably has the highest privacy standards of most countries. And moving forward, we need to grow in the ability to kind of let down the walls of around our family. And so that's been a struggle, but good, I think, moving forward. Other campus life things, yeah, we do a lot of stuff together, but then we also try to do some stuff apart and see parts of the city that are a little bit further away from where we're at here. And so it's a good combination of doing things together in Christian fellowship here, but also venturing out further and further away from home base to know more about Tijuana.
Yeah. What's been both the most encouraging part of your time down here and what's been the hardest part of your time down here?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The most encouraging part has probably been growing in my understanding of God's character. So early on, we had a visiting teacher from Greenville Presbyterian Seminary, and he taught on the Old Testament and exposed God's character through a lot of the stories in there. And I think some of the more confusing stories for me, the ones with adultery or the ones with Jacob and Esau, and just kind of wondering about what God was doing in that story. It seems kind of confusing and strange at times, but walked us through and was able to kind of expose God's character and how he is a good father. And yeah, he gives graciously to us. And so growing in my understanding of his character, but then also in our trials and our sufferings, that he remains good, his character is still good, and relying more heavily upon his sovereignty and on his goodness, even in the difficult.
Hardest.
Yes, probably a lack of privacy. We've already kind of touched on that, but just always, you know, you can't go outside, you can't get a cup of coffee, you can't get a snack without running into someone, or you just are always surrounded by people. You can't have a moment with your children, whether that's good or bad, you can't, you're always seen. So that has probably been the hardest for me, is just kind of like, well, this is who I am and you're going to see all of it. So,
yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think that some of the highlights for me really is being able to, I traveled a lot for work before coming down here and was gone from our family a lot. And to be able to step into the role of a dad and husband a little bit better, I think more in line with what God would ask of me, has been really, really sweet to have that time down here to do. I think biggest difficulties would be, yeah, just the, like Carolyn said, kind of the tightness of relationships down here, and also how that exposes our own sin, our own proclivities to sin and temptations that we might face. And just having to kind of come face to face with a lot of parts that it is kind of a pressure cooker down here. And so it brings out parts of us that maybe we've pushed back pretty deep or just didn't even know about. And that process of kind of killing those sins and doing things more for the glory of God has definitely been difficult.
Yeah. Some of the things you described may answer kind of my final question, but I'd just love to know, how has this training, how has your time down here drawn you closer to Christ personally?
I think for me, it's pretty easy to get into a routine of doing this and forgetting who is the one who sustains us in all things. And so I think by God's grace, he has shown us through people's stories who have been on the field, very weak people who have done what we hope to do, and seeing a church started amongst people who currently have never heard the name of Jesus. And so these people are weak people sharing their stories very openly, and it has been really sweet to see ourselves in their shoes a little bit and understand that we're quite weak, but we have a very strong God who desires this, and it feels like a privilege to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it probably has been coming face to face with my sin more. You are so much more exposed to it as you're living so closely with other people, and you can't really come face to face with your sin as a Christian without turning to Christ often. And so that has been really sweet, just to be like, wow, man, I am pretty ugly inside, but to turn to Christ on the daily and accept his grace and forgiveness and walk in newness of life has been really cool. And just to continue to stumble and fall, but rely on Christ has been a sweet thing.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. We're doing this at about 6:30, 6:45 in the morning. They just got done with their morning workout. I can attest to that. I witnessed it. I didn't participate, though. And they got to get their kids up and get breakfast ready for the day. And so I want to say thank you, guys. And hopefully, church family, this was encouraging to you just to hear from some of the members that are down here training. And yeah, we love you guys. And we're thankful for the work that you're doing.
Greg, thanks for doing that interview with that family. And something I noticed is that we're not using their names in the interview. Why don't we use their names?
Yeah, so typically when we as a church are talking about our workers, either at training or overseas, we won't share their first or last names, or we won't share the specific country that they are doing long-term work in, an exception being Mexico, as that is an open country. And that's just for security reasons. And a lot of these people are moving to countries that don't want Christians there sharing the message of the gospel. And so just because of that, just as an added layer of protection, we don't kind of openly communicate about the identities and countries of the people that we are sending overseas.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, obviously we have that family that's there. We have several individuals that are there. So how can we here in Des Moines at Walnut Creek support and be involved with Walnut Creek Global?
That's a great question. I think a common misconception is that people in the church will say, hey, missions, that's a good thing, but that's not my thing. What these families or individuals are doing, that's a noble task, and I just kind of am going to cheer them on and maybe clap my hands a couple times when they come back. And mm-hmm. But that's not, I think, how the scriptures describe the local church functioning. I think that really this work is a work of the local church, which is made up of the members. And so we view not just the pastors and staff as being integral in this process, but really the members of the church as being very involved in this task. And so one hope that we have as a staff is to increase the amount of education and engagement that Walnut Creek Church is participating in when it comes to this task of planting churches overseas. And so even an example being this podcast. So hopefully saints of the church are better educated in terms of what are we doing within Walnut Creek Global. And then in terms of how to be involved, there's a variety of ways that people can be involved to different levels. I would say one of those is our monthly international prayer. And so we, as a church, all four locations, we do something typically the second Sunday of each month, international prayer. We do that at our Windsor Heights location, and we'll pray for different countries, different missionaries that are overseas. If missionaries are back, they'll come and share updates. And the best way for you to be informed of that is there's a way to sign up on our Walnut Creek website on the global page. You can click on the link to be added to the international prayer email address, and you'll get an email once a month just that will inform you the next date and time in the country that we're praying for. So that'd be a big way. I would say our 1040 initiative, which we haven't talked about yet on this podcast, but that's something that we rolled out this kind of late fall, early winter downtown, really as a way to increase the engagement in the church body. And so the 1040 initiative is a $10.40 gift each month, and that money goes exclusively to the supporting of our overseas workers. And so in their monthly support, visiting them, variety of things as more and more people get sent out. This is an expensive task. Mm-hmm. Plane tickets and then the support that they raise overseas, a lot of these things, radius tuition, all this stuff costs a lot of money. And we think that it is money well spent. And so as a way to help offset a lot of those expenses, we have the 1040 initiative, but also we think that if people give a small financial amount each month, they will be more engaged in that work. If you just sign up for a newsletter and it comes once a quarter, if that doesn't cost you anything, you're maybe a little bit less likely to be engaged with it. But if you know, oh, this is what I'm giving money to each month out of my budget, you're more likely to read the newsletter that we do send out quarterly, mm-hmm. more likely to be engaged in the prayer requests for every one of our missionary units that we have within that newsletter, and read a variety of the other things that we have in that. And mm-hmm. so an aspect of being partnered in the 1040 initiative is that you do receive a quarterly newsletter that has book recommendations, prayer requests, pictures from the ministry, et cetera. You also receive just kind of a welcome t-shirt as a mm-hmm. way to say thank you.
Wearing
for
it right your, now.
There we go. It looks good.
So it's just a way to say thank you and maybe wear it around, pump it up a little bit. So I'd say those are probably two of the main ways. Another thing that happens in Central Iowa, typically each winter, is the missions course. Mm-hmm. So we just hosted that in conjunction with Valley Church, and we had that at Valley in January and February. So that's just a six-week course that looks at missions from a variety of angles, a biblical angle, a historical angle, kind of a current kind of worldview angle, and then how can you be involved in this work? And so those would be just a few quick hitters. Anyone that wants to be maybe more and more involved, I would love for them to come up and talk with me at mm-hmm. church or shoot an email. You can connect with our global team again on our website, and I would love to share additional opportunities for people to be involved in this task. Those are just a few of kind of low bar, get in prayer. It's probably the biggest way for people to engage in this work.
Yep, that's great. We'll make sure that we include an email address and links to sign up for the 1040 initiative and even to the global page in the show notes so that you can access those quickly, even just from listening to this podcast. So we want to make that really easy for people to get more involved and more informed. And while you were at Radius, Greg, you also were able to sit down with Brooks Buser, which is an exciting thing. It's a big deal, but I think some people might not know who is mm-hmm. Brooks Buser and kind of what is his role in the world of missions and Radius.
Yep. So Brooks is the president of Radius International. One thing even just to mention with Radius, it's not just down in Tijuana. There's a Radius Asia mm-hmm. that their classes are in Mandarin, and then they are desiring to start a few other Radius campuses located in other parts of the world with different languages. And so that's an exciting thing for them. Mm-hmm. But Brooks is the president of Radius, and he grew up in Papua New Guinea, and his mom and dad were pioneer church planters there. They planted an indigenous church in Papua New Guinea, and then he came back to the States for college, and then he and his wife, they moved their family back to Papua New Guinea after a few years in the financial industry, and he planted a church there alongside of some teammates. And then after successfully doing that, raising up local elders, he and his wife returned back to San Diego, which is where they are kind of from originally, their family is from. And then at that point in time, he kind of got locked back in with Radius, which his dad helped found over a decade ago. And so he now serves as the president of Radius International.
That's great. And so you were able to sit down with him, and I think we have that conversation here for you now.
All right, Walnut Creek, we have a special edition of Beyond the Pulpit, and I am currently down in Tijuana, Mexico at the campus of Radius International, and had the privilege of sitting down with Brooks Buser, the president of Radius International. And so thought we'd be able to chat with him for a number of minutes, ask him some questions, get a little bit more insight into Radius and what Walnut Creek goers who are down here training, what they're going through and what they are kind of preparing for on the field. And so, yeah, Brooks, just a couple questions for you. First question, we'd just love to hear a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your life growing up, a little bit of your background. What were you doing prior to, managing, overseeing, being the president of Radius International?
Yeah, well, first off, a big hello to all of the Walnut Creek family. We love that church dearly. I say we, representing the Radius staff and board, and just, you guys have such distinguished alumni. We'll probably not know many of you from the church body, but your alumni that have come through the program here, and by God's grace, you're doing some incredible things overseas. So very blessed to know them, to have a small part in their lives. My own story, so I was raised over in New Guinea, went to boarding school when I was 6 years old, so first grade all the way through to 12th grade. Loved the sport of basketball. Came back after I graduated from high school to the United States. My dad was an ardent David Jeremiah fan, so he wanted me to go to his college. So I went there, played basketball for 3 years, met my wife the first day of freshman orientation. She was 1 year ahead of me. And unfortunately, she was dating another guy, or unfortunate for him. And so we ended up becoming friends, and then he went off somewhere else and ended up marrying her. So I was very happy about that. Finished up college, went and worked as a CFO for a multinational. It took me a couple of years to work into that over in the Netherlands, and then got challenged into missions through reading my Bible. We ended up leaving behind everything in the finance world, went over to New Guinea again, where I grew up, and worked there for 13 years among a people group called the Yembe Yembe. And by God's grace, we're able to see them established with a church. We had to build an alphabet for them for the first time. I was in charge of translating all of the New Testament and the Pentateuch, except for the books of Mark, Hebrews, and Acts. Those were the only books in the New Testament I didn't do. 2016, we finished up, came back to the United States, contemplated being a pastor of a church or helping at Radius, and decided this was the best use of our background and talent. So we came here to Radius, and we've been here for 7 years, and we deeply, deeply enjoy it.
Awesome. Super encouraging. So Radius International, what is Radius International? Maybe how has it begun? What's kind of the purpose, vision of Radius International?
Yeah, so Radius was started long before I got here, long being 6 years before I got here. And so they started in 2011, but before that, they looked around and they looked at what are the major issues impacting missionaries. It was a group of pastors and missions pastors that got together and went, why are our missionaries coming back so early? They're not finishing their time on the field. What do we do about that? And Radius was created as an answer to all of those questions. And so a lot of preparation time, some serious life-on-life components, and then especially church planting and language acquisition. It was really created to make those two things primary. And so the students all graduate with a definition of the church, how to learn another language, and then there's also this business component. How do you do a business in a closed access country to stay in there? And then there's this other kind of fourth thread that's tying them all together, a theology of suffering thread. One of our core values is that suffering is normative and that they should expect a life of hard things. This is what the legacy kind of Adoniram Judson, John Payton, Amy Carmichael, Hudson Taylor, that history, if you're going to take the gospel somewhere where it's never been before, there should be an expectation. And so those are the threads that kind of tie. They're the major threads. There's also marriage, parenting, kidnap and ransom class, literacy, phonetics, phonemics, linguistics, but all of them kind of tie into those four major threads throughout the whole program.
And then with those threads, how are students instructed? Classroom, one-on-one, readings, outside of class time? What does it look like for students to become more and more competent in those areas?
Yeah, so we start off, we take them from day one, and we don't want to have them, we don't want an expectation that they're going to be doing something that we haven't trained them in. So we teach them how to make a friend. Then we teach them how to learn a language. Then we teach them these are the components to a healthy church. And then we want you to memorize why these components are important. Here's the biblical basis for them. So everything we teach is going to be in the 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock hours. So all morning long, they'll do that. Every other day, they have a morning workout that's pre-classroom hours. So it's not because we're trying to make Navy SEALs. It's just that healthy missionaries last longer. And so it's not an arduous workout. It would be a half hour. It would be a moderate strength. There'll be days where it's going to be a little bit funner and they'll have competitions against each other. They'll have breakfast after the workout, then the 8 to 12 classes, and then they'll have a lunch period from 12 10 to about 1:30, and then they start into a language session where they're doing this with a language helper. They'll alternate days, but there's a language session from 1:30 to 2:30, and then there's also one from 3:30 to 4:30, and they can put into practice what we train them in the classroom to do. So we're going to teach them how to learn a language. Then here comes friendly Mexican language helper who knows Spanish, obviously, really well, and we're going to teach them how to break that language down. And then they'll get some time in the community. Every 15 minutes of their day, we want tracked on a time tracker, so we want to know what they're doing with their time, because only disciplined missionaries are going to actually learn a language and see a church planted. And so that's going to be something where we want them in the community. In about 2 weeks, they're going to be doing their homestay module, where they all move in with a Mexican friend, and their language will go up substantially, just that life on life component. We talk a lot about life within the community here, which is the campus that they're on, and life outside of the walls in the community outside. And we want them in that community outside. They'll come back, they'll have a late dinner. We really want our moms to be involved in this. So our cooks make a lunch for us, and they also make a dinner that is heat up. They can heat it up and have it for their families. And then they'll do a lot of homework at night, and then generally they'll hit the sack sometime between 9:30 and 1:30, depending on the student. So
yeah. There we go. Some might be early to bed, early to rise. Others might be late to bed, early to rise. Why Tijuana, Mexico? You talked about learning Spanish. Is that because students are going to go to plant churches in a Spanish-speaking context, or why did you all decide to choose landing in Tijuana, Mexico?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when it started, this is what I'm told. Again, I wasn't here at the genesis of it, but I was told that they were looking at different locations, and we found this piece of property for campus number one down here, and it was at a really discounted rate. And then the light bulb started going on. Oh my goodness, to train North Americans in a cross-cultural environment where they don't have Walmart, they don't have some of the things that would be readily available if they were over or in the other side of the border on the northern side, those things taken away really simulate to a large degree what it's like to live in a cross-cultural context. And so the Spanish language is an easy language. It's a great test case language, because if they can't do well in Spanish, they have no business going to Tajikistan, China, Chad, all of those types of countries. So it gives us an early kind of, okay, how well do they do at an easier language? And we praise God every year when there are certain students that we find out this is going to be really hard for them. Better that we find that out on this side of the ocean than on the other side. The other misnomer that a lot of people don't understand is that the more languages you learn, the easier the next language is. Some people think, okay, if they learn Spanish, it's going to take up all the space in their brain and there's going to be no space for Arabic. The exact opposite is true. If they learn Spanish, Arabic will be easier, Mandarin will be easier, Bahasa will be easier. So just even getting their training wheels on in an easy language prepares them so much better for the next context. So this is why Tijuana has turned into just a wonderful gift to the cause of Christ as far as the Radius grads and them getting to these locations are concerned. So we're thankful for it.
Yeah. What kind of impact then in the community? And so you're located on a campus in Tijuana. What have the relationships looked like with families in the community, business owners in the community over the last decade or so?
Yeah. So that homestay project that I talked about, that puts our people into community houses all the time. And because they're building friendships with people and they're building authentic friendships, we want them involved in their businesses. We want them involved in their families. It's neat to see such a groundswell of goodwill. We were the only school that I know of in the entire country of Mexico that was allowed to stay open during COVID, because we know the chief of police and because we know some of the different judges and people around this community. We have an ESL program, English as a Second Language, that happens on Monday nights, and it's got three levels to it. And we just have people that keep coming back every year. We have a massive waiting list at one of the campuses just to get into the program. And so that goodwill, not just through the ESL program, but you've got 40 to 60 students who love the Lord Jesus, who want to make friends with people and who want to help out at all costs in their business. That's a really great introduction to Christians to gringos, because the Tijuana community is exposed to a certain type of gringo, and that gringo comes down here to party and usually to take advantage of this community. And our guys are the exact opposite of that. And so when they build friendships and they find out, oh, they go to this weird school where they learn languages and they learn business and they learn how to do ESL, that's just a sweet refreshment. We have two graduations at the end of the year. We have one graduation where they invite all their Mexican friends. Sometimes we have a DJ. Sometimes we had a mechanical bull. That was quite exciting. The staff get on the mechanical bull. But to see all of their friends from the community come in and to have somebody who didn't know Spanish before get up and give a little gospel presentation in Spanish, that's a powerful witness to the community of what this body of believers is doing. And then 2 days later, they go up north and we have a regular suit and tie graduation, speaker type of graduation. No mechanical bull there, but yeah, it's still a fun time. So yeah, a good relationship. That's great.
In terms of, I'm interested in knowing a little bit more about the business aspect. And so training students about business, what does that process look like? Talk about a business project throughout the school year. What does that look like? And then why or what is the purpose of training future overseas workers in business? Why would you do that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So when I talk about my own background in Papua New Guinea, we got in under a religious worker visa. So we were known to be missionaries or Christians. We could proselytize openly. Papua New Guinea is what's called an open country. There are a lot of countries like China, like India, like chunks of Indonesia, Tajikistan, that are closed countries, to where if you go in as a Christian, as someone who is trying to convince people that the way that God lays out in the Bible is the right way to live your life, you're not going to last very long. And so what most mission agencies and what seems to be the leading thought now is if they can have a good business, a real business that actually turns a profit, that will be the vehicle to keep them in the country so they can be gospel witnesses and hopefully see the disciples that believe on the Lord Jesus Christ gathered into a church. And so the business excuse me, is more of like a platform of sorts. And so that platform allows them to carry on ministry. So we walk through that. About 70, maybe 75% of our student body is going to go to closed access countries. So it's a big endeavor to teach them. Some of them have like nursing majors, kinesiology, whatever. There's a handful that will have business or accounting backgrounds. And so that's going to resonate with them. But to walk them through the basics of a business, how to conduct a business overseas. And I mean, that's a tough endeavor in your home context, in a foreign context where you got to learn the language, you got to know the laws, you got to know, okay, this isn't a bribe, this is just how business is done, or this is how things run over there. So we'll put them through some basics on business, then we'll talk about a philosophy of business, and then we'll do this business project where they come up with a people group and they're going to have a marketable project, something that they can sell or some service. And then we'll bring in business experts from around the United States, guys that have been vetted, that understand missionary dynamics in closed countries. They will vet their business plan the first time through. And then the second time through, they will actually judge it. And it's kind of like, have you ever seen Shark Tank?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like Shark Tank. And so they get cash prizes at the end, literally. So like the winners all go out and get pizza and a bazillion tacos or something like
that. Is there a Mr. Wonderful?
You know what? There are some that are fair, and I love those guys because Mr. Wonderful is just glorious, in my opinion. He tells the truth no matter what. And so I think they have two guys this year. There was only one guy for a while, but he was fairly like black and white. Hey, this is great, or this is a complete disaster. You guys need to go back and retool.
Yeah.
In the most Christian way possible. So,
certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Changing gears a little bit, Radius International and the church. How did they interact with one another? What ways is Radius set up to serve the church? And or what might be some ways that Radius is not trying to replace the role of the church as it relates to the missions endeavor?
Yeah. So Radius, if you bottom line it, Radius's training is not for the actual individuals that are coming here, the couples that are coming here to get trained. It's for the churches that are sending them. If the church can have some idea of how this individual will do in Tijuana, that gives them a huge leg up in sending them to a foreign context. And so we don't see the students as our primary, if you want to say this in business terms, our primary customer, so to speak. speak. We see the churches and giving the churches a well-vetted a student who has some knowledge now of some of these difficult areas that seminaries don't teach, Bible schools don't teach. It's kind of like this middle ground that very few churches have an expert in phonetics and linguistics. Very few churches have a expert in kidnap and ransom. So having these particular skill sets and then reporting back to the church at the end of each semester, here's how your member is doing. Here are 9 areas of character and competency. And then at the end of it, our recommendation, hey, we would send them based on what we know, or we would say, wait and watch these few areas. That tends to help the church a lot, but we're not trying to tell the members or your members coming through or anybody's, here's the people you should partner with, here's the country you should go to. We want them to bounce those decisions off of the church. Too often, missionaries end up becoming Lone Ranger missionaries, where they get a burning desire to go to Bangladesh or India, and they don't bring their home church in on this. When I was doing another podcast 3 days ago, and they were asking, what are the main things you would tell a college student who's interested in missions? And number one, head and shoulders, is go tell your church elders. Go talk to them. Go have a conversation with them, because we believe very much that missions begins and ends with the local church. It emanates from the local church, and the goal of missions is to see a local church planted. And so if you bypass the church on the state side end of it, you're really bypassing the engine or the instrument that really God has ordained to see the Great Commission accomplished. It's not through missionaries will be ambassadors of local churches, but it's really through local churches planting other churches in faraway lands that the Great Commission, by God's grace, will be fulfilled. And so that's kind of our way that we look at those relationships.
Yeah, that's great. So obviously you travel a lot, both domestically and internationally. So you visit a handful of churches across the U.S., and then you visit a number of workers and churches internationally. What are some of the more encouraging things that you're seeing, both in the American church as it relates to missions and on the mission field? And then to contrast that, what are maybe some discouraging things that you're seeing either domestically in the church or internationally as it relates to missions?
Oh man, that's a big question. Let's start with the positives domestically. So missions in the last 5 years, and it's just hitting an upswing like crazy, in that most major organizations that I would stand behind, missions is just popping big time onto everybody's radar. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but so Shepherd's Conference, which is John MacArthur's big conference, next year the entire theme is missions, and they're going to reorient their entire structure based on that conference. Cross Conference that was held last year was supposed to be at about 10,000. It ended up being about 11,600. They're anticipating 14,000 for the coming one next year. Nine Marks is putting out 9 books on missions coming out in the next 5 years. Ligonier is starting to press into this territory. There's just every organization is wanting to get their ducks in a row for how we understand missions and how we push this out to churches and to members within those churches. So that's incredibly encouraging to me, just to see the energy, the excitement, especially from seminaries and from institutions that are really tied on theologically. That's an incredible thing, because that hasn't been the case in the last 50 years. It's kind of like the church, which, praise God, the church was a major thing, but most guys are going, okay, if the church is major, then the church has to be a good sending church. All healthy organisms reproduce. That's how we know they're healthy. And if our churches aren't reproducing, even in international context, something's not healthy in this. And so they've reached a point where they feel like they're healthy enough. Now let's get this gospel to the end of the earth. So that would be the most encouraging thing I would say domestically, internationally. You know that we have Radius Asia, which is our program over in Asia, and then we have a secret one just for the house church missionaries coming out of China, and then we're starting Radius India in 5 months. I just got out of a meeting an hour ago where we talked about the scope and sequence of the curriculum. When are they going to teach what classes and to what degree? And just to see our international brothers, I know you're of this mindset, but the Great Commission will not be accomplished by English speakers alone. It's going to be Mandarin speakers, Hindi speakers, Bahasa speakers. That's the beauty of the Bride of Christ and all of its varied flavors and cultures and the way that comes together. So that encourages me greatly. Domestically, I would probably still be concerned with definitions and how people look at missions. Missions, especially when it comes to unreached people groups, I don't necessarily like that term. Unreached people groups means anything and everything today. The Gospel Coalition put out an article 3 weeks ago that said Quebec, Canada is the largest unreached people group in all of North America. And I'm going, that's really broad. And if we're going to call an entire province an unreached people group, that's pretty nebulous. If we can tighten up our terminology just a little bit, and man, I see four major lanes in church planting. One, the training of national pastors overseas. That's a wonderful thing to see those churches grow stronger. English-speaking congregations in strategic cities, national churches. I would never say Mandarin is a reached language group, but I wouldn't say it's an unreached language group. I would say it's a poorly reached language group. We need more churches in Mandarin. We need more churches in Swahili, more churches in Hindi, and then unreached language groups. That's kind of like your fourth metric. And so I think as the church gets better at defining missions, it will do a better job in how it allocates its resources strategically.
That's great. For a Radius grad, when they get to the field, either sharing just from what you guys are training them in or from your own experience, what do those 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 years look like? What are some of the things that they are giving their lives to and really hoping to see come forth when they move overseas with the desire to see a healthy local church come forth amongst an unreached language group?
Yeah. So, I mean, this has a lot of wiggle room in it, but generally, so they make it overseas. Generally, it takes somewhere between 2 to 3 years to learn that first language. Many of the people that have come out of Walnut Creek have gone to, like, Arabic is a Category 5 language. That, think of it like hurricanes. Category 5 is like as tough as it gets. So they've gone to some pretty tough ones. I am so encouraged with how they've done. They've excelled well. We've seen Radius grads outside of Walnut Creek do well also, but your guys have really done well. But that's a 2 to 3 year process. In the midst of that, they're looking at the business component. How do they stay in country? That platform that we talked about, that's probably going to add another year or so onto the process of getting them stable in country and then moving in among that unreached language group and then learning that language and culture to full fluency. That's another most likely 2 to 3 years. And then as they're either gathering people around their dinner table, people that are their friends or maybe their employees or people they've gotten to know, sharing the message of life and getting through that whole process, that's not a quick endeavor, especially when you're talking about people that have no background. Sometimes people read the book of Acts and they're like, well, the Ethiopian eunuch caught it in like a couple hour chariot ride. Yeah, but the Ethiopian eunuch was a Jew, or he had the background of what the Jewish people would know. And he was thinking these things before Philip came alongside. And so there's just all of this background. When we taught the Yembyembis, we had to teach them animals of the Bible. They'd never seen a sheep, never seen a camel, never seen a dog. You're just building foundation. Then Genesis 1, 2, and 3. In my mind, if somebody doesn't understand Genesis 1 through 3, there's no way they understand Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You got to know what you're being saved from. You've got to know the character of this God, his attributes. And so that takes quite a while, usually somewhere between 9 months to 2 years. And so that's the getting them to the where they understand the gospel. Some people by God's grace will be saved. And then the really long part, but you've already got the language now, is discipling those baby believers into becoming a church. And so that, for my wife and myself, that took us 8 years to go from baby believers to mature church. And so that's one of the classes we teach here is infant to mature church. And then you're starting to look at, do we have elders in place? Do we have deacons in place? And are they ready to take the reins? And slowly you take a step back, they take a step forward, but you're in the background still helping. That's another probably year and a half, 2 years of just seeing them brought to that full maturity. And then you're moving out and you're starting to pastor Walnut Creek someday in 15, 20 years. So that's the real quick, 15, 20, 25 years is somewhere. That's why we try really hard not to get into time frames too much, because everybody's is different.
Yep, No, that's great. Super encouraging. At the same time, very sobering to think about. This isn't a 2-week short-term mission trip. This isn't a 2-year assignment, but this is rather might be more in terms of decades.
Yeah.
2 decades or so. Probably last question. So for people in the church, people in Walnut Creek or other churches that might be listening, how can people get involved or support the work that is going on in terms of overseas church planting? How can they come alongside overseas workers, missionaries? How can they play their role in seeing this task completed?
Yeah, for faithful church members, I mean, I would start with that. Man, are you a faithful church member in your church to begin with? Faithful means, hey, you're a regular Sunday Christian. This isn't like, yeah, baseball league or tour ball like takes you out. Like if you're a faithful believer in the church, to get yourself on the missions committee, I would say that's a really helpful thing. One, to educate yourself, but two, man, if you want to be involved in missions, there's no better way to help out whatever that organization or the subgrouping of leadership within the church that really looks after the missionaries. Get involved in that. If there's partnership groups, some of them call them community groups, but groups that get behind individual missionaries being sent out. It's a wonderful way to be a good sender. Kind of your textbook or your main text for senders is the book of 3 John, how John speaks of his brother Gaius and how he helps support these guys. And then you've got the passage in Romans 10, 13 through 15. And verse 15 kind of speaks of the senders and their unique role in, man, standing behind these guys. How shall they preach unless they are sent? If they're not sent well, and sending isn't a one-time event, it's a continual event. Think of your brothers and sisters heading overseas and they're going to be gone for 15, 20, 25 years. Will you be behind them for 15, 20, 25? So that would be number one. Number two would be to educate yourself better on missions. So I would read some good missionary biographies or good missions books. Let the Nations Be Glad by John Piper is a great book. No Shortcut to Success, Matt Rhodes is a book I like a lot. The best missionary biography, in my opinion, is To the Golden Shore by Courtney Anderson. Second best, really close second, is the autobiography of John Payton. And then a woman who is just incredible, her convictions and what she did in India, Amy Carmichael, Beauty for Ashes by Ian Murray. Those are just wonderful books. So you educate yourself. And then I would say the last thing, go to good missions conferences. Take a group of people from your church that are somewhere between 18 and 25 and possibly could go to the mission field. Take them to the Cross Conference. We've got the missionary conference coming up with Mark Dever and Kevin DeYoung and John Piper and all these guys. That'll be October 18th, or excuse me, 16th to 18th in this year, 2024. Go to good conferences. They tend to be catalytic in their way that they get people excited, but the excitement, if they've got the underpinnings of a good church, lasts much longer. And so those would be my three recommendations.
No, those are great. Well, yeah, Brooks, appreciate your time. It's always a joy. This is my fifth time down to Radius, and I enjoy coming down and seeing our people that are down here. I also enjoy maybe as much meeting new students, dozens of fellow classmates that we've met over the years that become deep friends to Walnut Creek goers that go to different parts of the world. And then last but not least, the street tacos. And so we're heading out here, going to get a little bit of autobada, some carne asada. Oh. But yeah, again, greatly appreciate your time. Our church has been very blessed by Radius, blessed by the staff, by the teaching and training. And so I just want to say thank you from the church for that.
Well, brother, we have enjoyed your members tremendously. You guys are, for whatever reason, and I hope this isn't the high water mark of Walnut Creek. It's been amazing to see what God has done among your body. And what will be quadruply amazing is when we reach glory someday and all of these people that your members have affected around the world. And by God's grace, we'll see sister churches, we'll see disciples. That is accruing to the account of Walnut Creek, and only in glory will we measure such things. So yeah, kudos to you guys, the leadership team, and the regular members there that are just faithful, good church members. That's a grace of God.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Well, Walnut Creek family, hope this was an encouragement to you live from Tijuana, Mexico. We love you guys, and we'll talk soon.
Well, Greg, thanks for getting that interview with Brooks. It's really awesome to hear from him and just what's going on in Radius. And so as we close our time together, is there anything you'd like to just share or say before we sign off here?
Yeah, I would just like to say thank you. I know that our workers that are overseas and at Radius, they are tremendously blessed by Walnut Creek Church, by the members and regular attenders of Walnut Creek, and just their support, the generosity, the financial support, the prayer support, the care packages as they interact with other workers, missionaries at training or overseas, they become more and more thankful for Walnut Creek Church and just the saints and the support. And so I just want to say thank you on their behalf, just for your prayers, your sacrificial giving. In many ways, you guys have been heavily involved in this from the beginning. So just want to say thank you.
Always want to say thank you as well for all your labor and work, and to those of saints that are on the field right now. And if you're listening, we just thank you guys for all your labor, and we pray for you and look forward to seeing what God continues to do through you and just in the cultures you're in. So Lord willing, we'll see many come to faith in Christ and churches planted here over the decades to come. With that said, I think, Derek, you want to take us
home? I think that's it. Thanks for jumping into this podcast. This is probably our longest episode yet, but I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it to hear what God is doing, not just here in Des Moines, but all over the world. So again, thanks, Greg, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Pulpit. Walnut Creek Church exists to glorify God by making authentic disciples of Jesus Christ who love and worship Him in all they do. If you were encouraged by this podcast, please leave us a review on either Apple or Spotify. For more, please check out our YouTube page and subscribe for daily clips and videos. To submit a question to be answered in our next podcast, please visit our website at walnutcreekchurch.org/downtown. If you haven't already, give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram and sign up for our weekly email updates. And please join us at 323 East Locust Street in downtown Des Moines at 8, 9:15, or 10:45 a.m. on Sunday mornings.